And only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. You are listening to KFAR Radio. We're at 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, and we live stream at kfarradio.com. This is the Problem Corner. I'm your host, David Pruse. If you want to call into our guest today, we're at 907-458-TALK, 907-458-8255. And with that, I have Will Stapp in the studio with me here this morning. Will, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good, David. How are you?
Doing well. Excuse me. Representative of District 31, Will Stapp.
32. Yeah.
What's in a number?
Yeah, just a geographic location. No, my name's Will. I represent East Fairbanks, Fort Wainwright, and most of Badger Road. And heading to Juneau tomorrow for the kickoff to another legislative session, you know.
Your second year.
It is my second session, yeah.
You were very involved as a freshman.
I try to be, you know. I feel like, you know, folks put their confidence in me by sending me down to Juneau, and it's kind of my responsibility to ensure that, you know, we forward to the our objectives, you know, and get stuff done. So that's what I try to do.
That's a long time to be down there, my friend. 5 months.
Yeah. You know, a lot of it's productive. Some of it's not. You know, it's the nature of the Byzantine bureaucracy that is government, you know. So.
And how do you get all your stuff down there?
Well, right now I'm going to ship it on AKR cargo. you know, normally, so my, you know, this is kind of, might sound a little silly, but like I always try to save the state money. And then it comes
That's good.
So what I would normally do, what I did last year, is I packed everything in my car and I drove to Whittier and I took the ferry. And I actually rode the ferry and stayed in a closet, you know. Because you can get all the nice rooms, but, you know, I didn't do that. I paid the cheap closet room and, you know, rode through the winter waves across the Gulf to Juneau because I thought that was the most efficient, you know, use of funds to get to Juneau to kind of do my job. And this year they're not running the ferry, so at least the Cross Gulf ferry. So still can run the Haines ferry, which, you know, I would drive to Haines, but my passport expired.
So you went to Seward and went across.
I did. Well, yeah, Whittier.
Whittier. Yeah. My God.
But this year I'm shipping the car and, you know, with the wife and kiddos, we're flying out tomorrow. And I'm going to drop a bunch of totes at AKR Cargo today and
go for it.
Go for there. So
good for you. Thank you for what you do. Really. Thank you for what you do. You had a pretty active season last year. What are your thoughts this year?
Yeah, you know, so kind of the same philosophy, you know, continuing to make the ball better. And like I told folks, you know, one of the main kind of things I ran on was I tell folks that, you know, in the state of Alaska, we have to make our state government operations more efficient and less wasteful, you know. And, you know, we'll get into some of that as an examples for people because, you know, every year people talk about things and I like to do things, you know. In kind of first year, we looked at the budgets that I have in the House Finance Committee, which are some of the largest in the state. That's your health budget, family community services budget. And, you know, the first thing I looked at is, you know, okay, so what's the most efficient way that we can start reducing the state's overall spend on the operating budget? And that's really looking at Medicaid and how we administer that program. So the first year I looked at kind of a niche thing called tribal reclaiming. So for most people don't know, when a tribal enrollee is a member of Medicaid and they, you know, they go get healthcare treatment in the state, the federal government is supposed to pay 100% of that liability. That's how it works in federal law. But the state is continually on the hook for that amount of money. It's anywhere from $50 to $100 million in state funds to pay for tribal Medicaid members. And the main reason is we cannot what's called reclaim the money from the feds, because we are having a difficulty time with provider care coordination agreements and really chasing down the documents we need to get the money back.
But right? This is also in your bailiwick of business. So you know this better than anyone walking in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this is what you do, health benefits insurance.
So, you know, you talk to folks and you say, okay, and I said, in this particular case in healthcare services, what we actually need to do is we need to add a 2 or 3 positions, right? And like, well, how on earth do you save the state money by adding people, right? And in the case of tribal claiming, like, keep in mind, each one of these people you add, maybe you put them on payroll for salary and benefits, and that's $70,000, $80,000 a year. But they are net saving the state $10 million on average, right? Mm-hmm. So that, to me, that's the best $70,000 you can spend, right?
Exactly.
spend 70 to save 10
Make
million.
Make them get you $20
million. Yeah, exactly. So if you look at the numbers, FY23 numbers from 22, and you'll see more of that when the FY24 actuals come in, you know, next year, is, you know, we went from $86 million, we reclaimed to $124 million, right? And that's in a single fiscal year. And I tell folks that's real money. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's $60 million savings.
With 3 people.
Yeah, exactly, right? So that's a big deal. I'm very proud of that, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think very, very few people come on and say, hey, you know, we did this and it actually worked out and saved the state money. So,
you know, I always look at government, a person like yourself or myself, you're there. Most people think you're there to get something done. But there's a flip side of that. You're there to stop something stupid from being done.
Yeah, a lot of that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, there's lots of examples. You know, I tell folks, you know, oil price in Alaska is very funny because whenever oil price is high, everyone believes we have a ton of money. Which in some sense that's true. In a lot of sense that's not true, because a lot of times you have costs, and like you do in business, and the state has a lot of costs that it has effectively kicked the can down the road in a long time. Deferred maintenance is one of those things. So you can look at revenues this year and say, well, oil price is 70.
You know, maintenance is not sexy.
No, it's not. And it's a pay now or pay later.
Pay more. Now or pay more later.
Yeah, problem, exactly. You know, so one of my bills this year is to set up a maintenance modernization fund for the University of Alaska. Because most people don't realize that, hey, the bulk of state facilities, at least 40% of state-owned buildings are actually university buildings, and they have about a $1.5 billion deferred maintenance problem, right? So what, you know, the concept is we're going to be setting up a maintenance and modernization fund for the UA system. It's going to be $35 million a year, so they can start to actually leverage that capital into bonding and replacing long-term, you know, usage of these facilities. Because, you know, the longer we wait to do that, the more expensive it's going to be. And, you know, the last thing you want to do is have to amortize costs over a year rather than 10, 15 years, you know. So that's kind of another area that we're getting into, and we're going to work to kind of chip away at that really unfunded liability currently.
Well, hold it. Just time out. Let's stop right there. How's your new son, and congratulations,
Dad. Oh, thank you. Yeah,
how's Atlas doing? How is the boy?
Atlas is doing great. Yeah, I have 3 kids. I have 2 daughters and a son. My son's a newborn. My oldest daughter is 5 going on 6. My middle daughter is 2 going on 3. Abigail, Emilian, Atlas. Atlas is hungry, happy, and healthy. So he's doing real good.
That's all you want.
Yeah, and he's about to go on his first
airplane trip.
Plane ride, yeah, exactly. You know.
Congratulations, sir. That's great. Yeah. Sorry for... What I should have let out with us.
No, so, that's okay. You know. That's okay. Yeah. And that's, you know, just in case people are curious, you know, my background, relatively simple. You know, I came to Alaska in the Army. I served in the infantry. I was a paratrooper. I did 2 deployments to Iraq, wounded in combat in the surge back in 07 in Iraq. Got out of the Army, met my wife, started in business and insurance in Alaska and Fairbanks. And really lived here ever since, and then lots of different service organizations, and then ended up running for office after my longtime rep retired, you know. So,
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Hi folks, Ralph Seekins here, Seekins Ford Lincoln. It's winter outside, but working with Ford, the deals are hot. Alaska-equipped brand new Fords and Lincolns with as low as 0% finance rates and cash rebates of thousands. Then a lot full of factory-certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs with low, low finance options. We finally have the inventory, and we want to start 2024 with a bang, so hurry in and drive home your best deal of the year right now, right here at Seekins Ford Lincoln, and I'll see you here.
Dearest Mother, I've written in the past about visiting Brewster's. I once again went two evenings ago. More great food, generous portions, and it was quick to come out. I tried something new, mozzarella sticks. They were something I've never had before anywhere, and I will look forward to coming back to Brewster's to have them again. My server, of course, was delightful and was very attentive. Great service, great food. Plus, they have a bar. Mother, I will be back. Brewster's is one of the better restaurants in Fairbanks for dinner. Your beloved son, Henry.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times today, with daytime highs approaching 8 below. Southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Lows level off around 17 below. Tonight, mainly cloudy skies expected. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 13 below. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Representative Will Stapp, District 32, in the studio who are with me here. Now, Will, you're going down to Juneau, second year of the session, there's 280 bills filed.
Yeah.
You got 5 months to get through and trying to get them over the Senate or companion bill.
Yeah.
Through. And you have two of those bills.
I do. I have a little bit more than two, but I do have two.
Tell me about the two that
I'm looking at. I was going through the bill list the other day, and if you know, folks kind of want to understand the issues with government and programs and spending, is there's 280 bills in the House right now, and as far as I can tell, only two bills actually delete programs, right?
And they're yours.
Yeah, they are mine, right? I won't kind of get into constitutional obligation versus statutory obligation, but, you know, everything in the budget that the state funds, almost, you know, say 90% of that we are funding because we told ourselves at some point we wanted to do it, right?
That it was important.
Exactly. So, you know, we have a big problem right now in the state with SNAP benefits, paying those out in a backlog. And
what's SNAP benefit?
SNAP is like a EBT card. When I was a poor kid, I used to have the Monopoly money. Mm-hmm. You know, you get an actual debit card now, so you no longer have the Monopoly money. SNAP backlog, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, right? It's the food stamps is basically what normal folks call it, you know. And the state has been struggling mightily to just issue people their EBT cards so they can load them with funds and stuff like that. And just to give some perspective on that, that's a federally funded program, right? So the state is a pass-through. All our job is to administer it, you know. And the feds even actually help us administer that program through funding, right? So, you know, when you're struggling to – this is like a core function of the Department of Public Assistance. They are struggling to meet the challenge of that core function, you know, for a lot of different reasons. And it's costing our state a ton of money. You know, last year we had to do a supplemental appropriation in state money. And we had to budget a bunch of temporary positions. And this year the governor's budget rolled out, and it's got the largest line item in there is another supplemental appropriation from state funds to DPA. To fix the SNAP backlog. And keep in mind, that's state money, you know, that we are spending on a federally funded program, mm-hmm. right? So that's like heartburn, really inefficient.
It's a slap in the face.
Yeah, and then we also have money that's going to the food banks, right? And why are we giving money to food banks? Because we can't pay SNAP, so the food banks have lines out the door, you know.
And they're distributing the food.
Exactly, you know. So this is a problem that compounds to another problem. All right, so what did I do? So I kind of went through the department and the budget, and I looked at the DPA eligibility technicians, and I said, okay, what are these people doing, right? So to break that theoretical down and kind of move it into practical aspect, there is basically when someone goes to the DPA office, they get a forms they fill out for public assistance, right? So on the application form, you have basically front page of the application has a bunch of boxes, right? And people check the boxes that they are applying for. And some of that stuff's going to be like Medicaid or food stamps, you know. But there's other programs on there, too. One is called General Relief Rent and Utility Assistance, and others called Chronic and Acute Medical Assistance, or CAMA, right? So I went through those programs, and I looked at them line by line. And, you know, the first one I identified was General Relief Rent and Utility Assistance, and the second one I identified was CAMA, right? So we'll kind of start with CAMA, and I'll try to articulate how that actually works. So last year, 6,226 people applied for chronic and acute medical assistance. All right. Zero of those people received chronic and acute medical assistance. Okay, so the question is, why did 6,226 people apply and nobody get approved to be on the program? And the answer was, well, when the state expanded Medicaid and, healthcare reform passed or Obamacare passed, that removed the need for the program for 99.9999% of people, right? So what are you left over with a statewide program that almost no one, literally no one right now, but if you go back...
Qualifies for.
Yeah, but if you go back 4 years, there were two people who got on it, qualifies for, right?
Wow.
Yeah, and those two people...
Two out of 20,000.
Yeah, two out of 20,000, basically, right? And those are the people who applied. Okay, so what does this actually mean in practical efficiency, right? So the way the state looks at these types of programs and funding is they look at it like the money out in grants and benefits, all right? They don't calculate the actual business cost inputs that you or I would.
Yeah, the human cost of doing this.
Exactly. So in the budget book, we appropriate about $180,000 a year for CAMA. That money doesn't get spent, so it defaults back to the department or it goes back to the general fund, right? But that's not the actual cost of the program. The cost of the program is an administrative, again, the Byzantine bureaucracy. So what does that look like? So you just do simple math, right? You take 6,226 and you say people, right? And you say, okay, well, how long on average does it take to process an application?
That's going to be denied.
Exactly, right? And that process, according to the department, is 90 minutes. That's the average, right? So it takes 90 minutes to process an application that's going to be denied.
So you're looking at 50,000 hours.
Yeah, so you're looking at man hours, right? So you take the...
So 2,040 hours per year... You're looking at 25 people.
Yeah, exactly, right? So if I just look at last year, 6,226, right, multiply that by 1.5, an hour and a half, basically, and you get 9,444.7 or something, And then you multiply that by payroll hour, right? I mean, this is how you do it in normal business. And then you're going to find out that, hey, it costs the state $300,000 to administer a program that nobody's on, okay? So my argument is, okay, well, I don't think most voters would appreciate this level of inefficiency and waste, in our state government.
And by discontinuing this program, you're not going to hurt anyone.
Exactly.
Ready for a phone call?
Sure.
Good morning. You're on KFAR Radio with Representative Will Stapp, and your name is?
Randy.
Hello, Randy.
Hello, Dave and Will. Before you go off to Juneau, I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank all 60 legislators, and that, of course, includes you, Will, for giving us a wonderful balanced budget last year in 2023, first time in a number of years, a difficult thing to do, but something that I think most citizens expect and want and appreciate, and I hope you can repeat it. I hope that they do not try to further suck down on the CBR savings account, which should be used only for an emergency. And that CBR did come in very handy when we had an emergency crash in the price of oil in 2014 and 2015 and got us through the next few years without going completely over the cliff. And so thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Randy. So, good fiscal principle, people, and you can apply this in your own life, We're in another high revenue year in the state, right? We have oil prices in the high 70s, right? And we'll see what the future projection is. So a good rule of thumb is you should not be spending out of your savings when you are, in a high revenue year.
Yeah.
You just shouldn't do it. And you should resist the opportunity to do it. And, that's a more difficult, thing to convey to people than you'd think, to be quite honest.
Randy, thank you for the phone call. Greatly appreciate it.
Bye.
My thought would be, this is my thought, projecting what the oil will be on an annual basis for a year is, let's bring out their Ouija board.
Yeah.
And so my thought would be, okay, let's place it on the last five-year average.
Mm-hmm.
Over the last 5 years, what's the average? And whether you're right, wrong, or indifferent, it's budgetable, and it's not going to be too far off, most likely.
Yeah. Yeah, well, there's two parts of the equation. One is the price. Two is the volume, right? Yeah, and I think most people don't even realize kind of the most egregious thing that they get wrong often is they overproject the amount of barrels per day that we produce, right?
Was it 440,000?
It was 440,000, but last year, and you see this in house finance, the projections were as high as 520,000, right? I mean, so you're almost 100,000
miles away. Who gave you that projection?
That's the state Department of Revenue folks, you know. And you just sit there and you say, okay, well, when is the last time that the state has averaged over 500,000 barrels a day? And
not this century.
Yeah, well, yeah, in this century, but you'd have to go back 10 years ago, right? Okay. So why would you hand me a piece of paper that says your optimistic projection is over 500,000 barrels a day when we haven't done it in 10 years, right? And that's a chronic problem in a lot of other areas of the state budget. You know, the other one, it's kind of a pet peeve, is the money we spend on fire protection or fire service, right? We have wildfires in the state, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so every year, part of the supplemental budget includes additional money for fighting forest fires. The reason is because we budget below, substantially below, the 10-year average of the cost of fighting fires, right? And, you know, we shouldn't do that, right? You should at least budget the 10-year average.
Yeah.
And we do it intentionally, or it's done intentionally, to hide the actual cost of operations. And I don't... You know, I fundamentally don't believe in doing that stuff. I think people in the state need to know what things cost.
You pay for it now up front or try and hide it in later?
Yeah, they hide it in a, what's called a supplemental request, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of true in a lot of things, and we can get into some of that. But I do say, you know, there are certainly efficiencies that, you know, my goal is to make in state government and save the folks the state money. And when it comes to, again, you know, I was talking about the CAMA bill earlier. So the reason that is critically important is because, keep in mind, the same people who are processing those applications that no one gets approved on because nobody qualifies for are actually the same people who are supposed to be doing the SNAP backlog. You see what I mean? So I have a critical problem in one area that involves the same employees, right? And I am burning useless man hours.
In this area.
In another area. Right? So my hope is people kind of understand that gross inefficiency, and then we'll... You know, we'll get rid of it, and we'll focus on the things that are core function of the department, and we'll save money and time.
What's your second bill?
Yeah, the second bill is the same concept, you know. It's a general relief rent and utility assistance, okay? So this is the same, you know, DPA form, same DPA application. And when, you know, you go to the DPA office and you apply for public assistance, you know, Medicaid, food stamps, and then the next box says general relief rent and utility assistance, okay? So if I'm, you know, going there, I'm checking the box because I need some general relief, right? Sounds great. So the requirements of this program are antiquated. Actually, it's a pre-statehood program, at least in conception. And so since we started this program pre-statehood, you've had the Great Society, you've had a ton of different federal programs, you know, HFC, heating assistance, LIHEA, rental assistance, all that type of stuff. So general relief rent and utility assistance is a very redundant program. It's mm-hmm. a state program. And again, almost nobody qualifies for. So I say almost because last year the state made 66 payments capped at $70, right? So again, you look at a program, and that's not people, by the way, and that's a monthly payment. So in theory, it could be as little as six people, or it could be as high as 66 people who qualified for general relief rent and utility assistance, okay? So, you know, I asked the question to the department, hey, how many people are, like, take advantage of this? And, of course, they don't know. And the reason they don't know is because they don't track the metric, right, which tells you that you have an efficiency problem, right? So how do you fix something that the people in charge of administrating it do not track the appropriate metrics, you know? And that's kind of true of a lot of things, right? So the number I tell folks, the 6,226 applications, they can't differentiate between general relief, rent and utility assistance, and, of course, CAMA, because they don't track that underlying metric, right? Which, from my end, is frustrating. But if you want to know why our state has so many problems.
And that's one of them.
Yeah, it's because, you know, you're not doing, you know, the appropriate things.
Fairbanks, we are going to take a commercial break. We're going to have some bumper music. Genesis, Land of Confusion. That's obviously Glenner.
Yeah.
Then we'll have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials and weather, and we will be back.
Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
In Yemen, condemning the United States and the United Kingdom for what they describe as a brutal attack. The American and British military is bombing those rebel targets in Yemen. It comes in response to a series of Houthi strikes on ships in the Red Sea. Deputy Pentagon Press Secretary Sabrina Singh on the Fox News Channel says, "We didn't start it."
Well, it's a bit ironic coming from a Houthi spokesperson, given that they're using the words brutal aggression when we've seen over 20 attacks from Houthis against international commercial ships, U.S. vessels, and others in a area like the Red Sea that sees 15% of the world's commerce flow through it.
Texas Congressman and House Foreign Affairs Committee Chairman Michael McCaul.
My view is it's about time that we struck back.
His comments there on the Fox Business Network. We are watching for updates of the Middle East. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
A $7.6 million grant from the U.S. Department of Energy could fast forward the roof replacement project at Anween Elementary by multiple years. KTVF reports the project had been in the Beyond Years category of the borough's capital improvement program, a category that means exactly what it sounds like. These new funds, however, could get construction plans initiated this fiscal year. It was not even in our short-range horizon, but we knew it was an issue. We're scanning for grants and for those projects all the time. When that opportunity hit us, we check the boxes on all the criteria with that project and went, let's go for it, Fairbanks North Star Borough Chief of Staff Jim Williams said in a media availability session on Tuesday. Williams explained that the borough had to overlay conditions of scoring and ranking by the U.S. Departments of Education and Energy when applying for the grant. To receive the grant money, though, the borough has to furnish a 5% local match of about $400,000. That's a great investment to get a project like that completed, Williams said.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Words are in great supply. There are so many words that it's sometimes difficult to choose one. Deep down, we know a single word can change a mind, a heart, even the history of your septic tank. Like procrastination, as in putting off pumping your septic tank. Don't do that. Regular septic tank pumping keeps me regular, and I last much longer. My family has Bigfoot Pumping and Thorn pump me out once a year, and I continue to serve them much better.
Here's Dr. Tony Nima from Fairbanks Urology talking about prostate cancer screening.
If we know that they've got prostate cancer when it first starts, the disease is completely curable. You go, you get it fixed, and you move on with life, and you don't have to think about it again. If we find out later on and it's already spread, then the opportunity for curing the disease is no longer there. So the name of the game when it comes to cancer is finding out as early as possible.
So get screened today at Fairbanks Urology, corner of Cushman and Gaffney, online at fairbanksurology.com.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. Representative Will Stapp, District 32, is in the office with me. How you doing, sir?
Doing fantastic, David. Thank you.
You know, packing up a family and moving to basically a town that in most areas would be three states away is not an easy thing.
No, it's not. It is not.
And you're going down there in the winter.
Yeah. In January. At least it's a little warmer down there, though, on the bright side, right?
There's always something bright.
Yeah.
You get, you know, there's a lot of rain, fog.
Yeah, no. I mean, I grew up in Seattle suburbs, so I'm kind of used to the gloomy gray, you know?
Yeah. So. Okay. Budget.
Budget.
I have a prediction.
Oh, what's your prediction?
You're out within 120 days.
Oh, 121.
120. Well, I'm thinking 120.
Yeah. There you go. No,
with Senator Bishop, I said 121.
Yeah,
but I'm dialing it down one day.
Well, so the thing about the days in session, and this is something you don't really understand until you go to Juneau and you do it, is the clock itself is a weapon to be weaponized. Okay?
Yeah.
So people are like, well, why can't you finish in 90 days? Well, my goal is to absolutely finish in 90 days. And if up to me, we would, right? Because I got better things to do, you know. But people who want to apply pressure and leverage and get people to maybe support policies that they normally wouldn't support, you know, they weaponize the clock, right? So basically the goal is to keep the critical mass of issues, put it put it down to the wire, put it absolutely down the wire, and then apply maximum pressure on people to kind of pass or reject or something like that. So the constitutional limit to the session is actually weaponized. Exactly. So I tell folks, and you know, the people who weaponize it are generally people who've been there a long time, and they understand the value of doing that, right? So, and you know, I've had people tell me, you know, that, hey, they're retired and they can be there forever, and ask me if I can, you know, with three kids and business and all that, you know. So, yeah. Yeah, no, it's a thing. It's a real thing, you know, I tell folks. Yeah,
but citizen since legislature. It's a, since right? It's an election year, I'm predicting no special session.
Yeah, I'd hope call, so,
but,
you know.
You know, so you're, but that doesn't mean the governor might not call you back.
Yeah, you know, I don't, you know, it's hard to crystal ball these things. I would say that, you know, the only things that you would, we would do special session on were like probably something like a gas line or something like that, you know. But, you know, the truth is the reason I would expect us not to have a special session is because, you know, ideologically, we, you know, are far apart on a lot of issues, you know, from the House majority and the Senate majority, you know. And, you know, special session is just not going to sort that out. An election will sort that out, you know what I mean? So you can have a special session. You can talk about things that people want to do. You know, I'm Republican. I'm a conservative guy. So there's certainly things that I would like to do that I know not going to even get heard in the other body, you know. Mm-hmm. So I tell folks last year and even this year, I'm still moving forward a constitutional spending limit because I believe you have to have control mechanisms on state spending. You know, it's a very clever bill. It's tied to gross domestic product, state economic output. So it'll change up or down based on the performance of private sector GDP. And I can probably move that bill, and it's in House Finance right now. I could pass it. We could pass it out of the House, but the Senate hasn't moved it. Mm-hmm. It's had one hearing. It's probably not going to have any more hearings, and it's not going to get passed. And, you know, the reason is because, you know, people don't want to limit spending, you know, I mean, and there's even a lot of people, you know, in the House, we don't want to limit spending, you know, because they think of all the things that, you know, they're better at spending money on than
their wish list that they want to get done.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and, you know, I would say overall, you know, a lot of folks, and of course, not all, but there are a lot of folks who have a philosophy when it comes to things that they just fundamentally believe that they, through, you know, government appropriation of funds, can solve problems better than everybody else, you know. And, you know, most of those appropriations, in fact, quite a lot of them people are making, which to me are kind of shocking because they're huge amounts of money, you know, millions of dollars. But there's not a lot of thought through as far as the return on investment in the utility. And I'll give you a really good example of that if you want to. Mm-hmm. So, an example was I had a lady on House Finance who wanted to add $1 million to the university budget for the purpose of training teachers at UA. Okay? So this is what she wanted to do, is spend an additional $1 million for training teachers, right? Logic is we have teacher shortage, we need teachers, let's throw more money at educating teachers, okay? So I said, okay, if you can answer me these four questions, right, I'd probably support your amendment, right? Question one was, at UA, how many people are enrolled in education for teaching versus what is the capacity the university has to educate them, right? So where are we at enrollment in total capacity? Question two was, when those people graduate, how many of them stay in state and teach? Question three was, how many extra teachers do you get with $1 million, right? And question four was, if you gave them an additional $1 million, could you even control how they spend it, right?
Those are probably ugly answers she had to look at.
Well, and but you know, to her credit, you know, she got the answers. And the answer one was, you know, they're 50% from what they can teach capacity, what they can train now to what their capacity is. So they're not even anywhere near capacity. You know, question two was half of them go out of state. Question three was, you know, it's not going to add any more, not going to train any more teachers, because question four is they can spend the money however you want, right?
Oh, Jesus.
But the end result was she didn't offer the amendment, right?
Yeah.
And, like, to me, you know, I'm a dollars and cents person, and I care about efficiency and ROI. So people inherently want to try to solve all these problems, and there's many people who believe government is the thing that solves all the problems. And And, you know, my hope is when you say, okay, well, how about you look at this from an ROA and an impact investment standard, you know, we'll make smarter decisions, you know. So,
That's the hope anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the time it's not the case. But, you know, you get a little win here and there and you talk to folks. You know, I did stuff last year, too, with the budget. You know, health budget's really interesting because, you know, all your kind of vulnerable people are augmented in this budget. So you always got to be very careful with how you deal with it because the optics are always bad, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, the Department of Health, you know, public health section, you know, they came out with a plan. They wanted to address syphilis in the state, right? So what most people don't know, like Alaska's children being born with syphilis rates are increasing, right? Statistically large increases, but actually numerically not that many people. So women are having babies who are having syphilis, right? And a baby born with congenital syphilis is incredibly expensive and it's horrible for the child, right? So this is certainly something that we need to look at fixing, right? So, you know, I asked the folks at the department, I said, okay, so this is like $1.5 million they want to address this problem, okay? So I said, okay, well, how exactly are we going to fix this problem? Let's talk target population. Let's talk, what are we actually talking about? Because, you know, mm-hmm. syphilis, I mean, it's like party like it's 1505,
is it,
right?
Anchorage? You know? Is it Western Alaska? Is it Fairbanks?
Yeah,
is
exactly.
It Southeast?
So what it boiled
Where's
down,
the population
what at? It boiled down to, it is a primarily homeless, drug-using women in Anchorage camps. Okay, that's kind of what we're talking about, right? Okay, so how do you get someone who is on drugs living in a camp outside of Anchorage in the woods to get a penicillin shot, right, and to not have syphilis, right? Because it's a relatively mm-hmm. easy thing to cure. We cured a long time ago, you know. It's an antibiotic shot. And, you know, after the long kind of technical explanations, the tangible stuff came down to like, oh, we're going to put billboards on buses and, you know. And I'm like, you know, so I tell folks, look, I can understand if you're going to, like, hire, I call it the ninja nurse, you know, yeah. in the middle of the night, they go and, like, dual wielding.
Use a jab.
Yeah, jabbing people in the homeless camp, right? Like, I understand that. Yeah. But how do you, and the other question is, like, how do you force these people to take
a shot?
Because yeah. you can't.
No.
Right? So, you know, but I mean, I don't want to be the guy to cut money for syphilis kids, you know, that's probably not good luck. So what we did was, and this was, you know, a request from the governor too. So what we did is I made it temporary INCT, which is what you do budgetary wise. So you make a one-time funding and you say, okay, next year you're going to come back. You're going to tell me how many of these folks or how successful your initiative was, right? And this year it was not in the governor's budget, the funding. Right,
was not successful then.
Well, that's
you could surmise that.
Yeah, that's what I'll surmise by the reason it wasn't put back, right? And you know, from my perspective, it's we don't want people having babies with congenital syphilis, mm-hmm. right? But if you're going to, you know, tackle that problem, you have to do it in a way that actually makes sense. That's practical, and it's not a theoretical. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You want to give a call in, we're at 907-458-TALK. That's 907-458-8255. And we will be back after these messages.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Are you interested in recycling in our town? Come learn about recycling, waste management, and environmental cleanup in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. It's the Interior Alaska Solid Waste and Recycling Symposium, Friday, January 19th from 12 to 7 p.m. at the Carlson Center. There'll be vendor exhibits and presentations provided for businesses and residents. Find out our recycling options in Interior Alaska. This is free to the public, Friday, January 19th at the Carlson Center. For more information, call 907-455-4496. Presented by Golden Heart Waste Management.
It's the 23rd annual Fairbanks Bunny Festival, brought to you by Good Cannabis, starring Lachlan Patterson, Thursday night, 8 o'clock at the Spur. And then the big show Friday and Saturday night, 7 p.m. start times at the Pioneer Park Theater, featuring a group of locals doing comedy for the very first time with the hilarious Lachlan Patterson. 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday night at the Pioneer Park Theater. Tickets available at aktickets.com. But hurry, these shows sell out fast. Brought to you by Good Cannabis, Zach's at Sophie Station, and the radio station.
KFAR weather.
Highs level off around 8 below. Today, under partly cloudy skies, southwest winds around 5 miles per hour. Mainly cloudy tonight, lows level off around 17 below. high of 13 below. Tomorrow, sunshine mixed with clouds at times. A dusting of snow tomorrow night. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Representative Will Stapp, District 32, in the office with me. You fly out tomorrow.
I do.
You're bringing totes to Alaska Air Cargo this afternoon.
Yep, here in a couple hours.
You and the lovely wife and the three kids get on the plane tomorrow.
Yep. And go to Anchorage, and then go to Juneau. Yeah.
What's in Anchorage for you?
That's just the stop.
Layover?
Yeah, that's just the layover, you know. Don't do direct flights to Juneau.
No. There's no reason for that. What
nope.
the heck? You're not in a 737 MAX, are you?
Oh, no. But I tell you what, that middle seat looks pretty good down in Alaska Airlines. It does. You know, I mean.
I'm staying away from that, you know.
My first reaction was, I'm certainly guilty of unbuckling my seatbelt pretty much all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm. Not anymore.
No. I said, you know what, in the safety brief, you know, if the flight attendants actually mentioned the fact that the window could get ripped out, you could get sucked out of the plane, and that's why you should have your seatbelt on, I guarantee you, like, everybody would have their seatbelt on.
You
right?
see, I'm on the opposite. I usually just keep it on. Yeah. I've always been that way.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of a rebel at heart, you know. I tell
yes,
folks.
Yes, yes, you are. Okay.
You know, when you grow up in Seattle and you want to be a rebel, the most rebellious thing you can do is join the Army and vote Republican, right? So, you know, been a rebel.
That's Seattle. Boy, that's a...
Yeah, that's pretty rebellious.
That's,
you know?
That's joining the other side of the man.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Okay. I definitely going to have the seatbelt on. Yeah, like I said, I would incorporate that in all the safety briefs if you want people to keep their seatbelts on, you know, and be like, hey, by the way, the reason you should keep your seatbelt buckled is because you could get sucked out the window, you know. I'm like, okay.
I got a feeling that there's just not many people going to sit near that emergency exit anymore.
Well, the problem was it was not an emergency exit. It was just part of the plane, you know, that in theory had a plug in it that could be an emergency exit. But you weren't going to know if you're sitting there, right? That's what makes it so scary.
It just came from a different area, wherever it was.
Yeah. Exactly.
Boy. You know. What are some of your goals again for this year on some of your legislation?
Yeah, so, you know, we have a bunch of other things. Military Commission Bill, that's kind of maximized the DOD Investment Alaska. LLC Bill, kind of cleaning up some of our survivorship laws in the state. Of course, spending cap, still going to work on that. You know, we talked about that earlier. I'm just going to kind of keep plugging along and seeing what types of things that we can do to make sure that we're addressing, you know, the energy problems and the needs in Fairbanks, and hopefully getting our economic engine going. There is light at the end of the tunnel. Like I tell folks, you know, we have $16 billion investment on the North Slope right now in the oil and gas industry, and the state hasn't seen that level of an investment since really Prudhoe Bay.
Yeah,
you know.
Kuparuk.
Yeah, so that's, Kuparuk, right? So that's a big thing, and we should be very proud of that. We have light at the end of the tunnel finally, you know, and our state's not declining. But, you know, we also have to talk about, you know, tough decisions where we want to go as a state. You know, basically we've been, you know, slowly sliding backwards. Costs have been going up. People have been leaving the state. And, you know, the truth is, unless Alaska gets serious about cheap energy for residents, we're never going to be able to have a diversified economy that has value-added services, which is what we need, right?
You gavel in on Tuesday.
Yeah.
If there's any veto overrides, you have how many? 5 days?
5 days.
Looking at education.
I'm relatively straightforward. So there are certainly needs in education. We talked about this last time I was on the program. So what they are going to request is an override for half of an increase in one-time funding. And, I don't support that. I supported funding for schools. I think that the focus at the legislature and really the governor should be on how do we ensure that a permanent increase in education funding is passed by the legislature with the things that folks want because of cost amortization, right? You know, school district costs have been increasing. Some of that is, you know, not of their own fault. You know, these are just natural inflationary pressures. Some of that is, you know, some of their costs are increased by their own decisions, you know. But, you know, the truth is things are going to be more expensive. Inflation is brutal for you know, education, and they still have the same fixed costs that are rising exponentially, you know, through to this inflationary pressure, you know. Like I tell folks, look, the truth is when you know, President Biden became president in January 2021, right, things are now 25% more expensive than they were the day they took office, you know. And that that is applicable to everything, you know. And, of course, in some areas of the economic drivers, it's worse. You know, inflationary pressure is worse. And, you know, that ball rolls downhill, you know. So, but you got to look at that, and you got to make sure that, you know, you're spending the money as efficiently as possible. Mm-hmm. You know? And you're going to there. But, no, I don't, you know, have any desire to kind of override any of the governor's vetoes. Never say never, but my answer is probably not, you know. I'm not even quite sure it would even come to a vote. I kind of look at that as a big PR stunt for people to kind of take positions, you know. So,
you know, unless you have the votes, you don't bring it up. Because the only thing you're going to do is you're going to start out the legislative year in a bad way.
Well, but that's the point, right? The point is for people to say that they want to do this and do that. I call this the kabuki theater of politics, right? And, you know, you saw some of that stuff with, you know, the big... you know, the big legislative pay raise thing that happened last year, you know, and I don't quite understand why the media carries water for people, you know, like I read an article.
Explain that. Yeah, I saw that. I saw Dermot Cole's article, and I was going to hold it now. Hold it.
Yeah, I mean, come on, people, you know.
First of all, he hates Governor Denley.
Yeah,
just hates him.
Yeah, I don't mind that stuff. I mean, you can talk about it, but let's get the facts situation, you know. Facts situation are, you know, for folks who don't know, stuff happened. The Speaker of the House sent a letter to the Senate President. All right. That letter said, "Hey, we would like you, the Senate, to join the House in joint session to override the pay raise." And the Senate President said, "We're not coming." Okay. So you want to write an article? You want to leave that detail out, and then you want to say that you know people did you know voted for it, voted against it in the House, and it didn't matter. Well, it doesn't matter because you need both bodies, and one of them wasn't going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, there's true that there's a lot of people in the House that. You know, spoke on the floor about it, and there's a lot of kabuki theater there, and people want the pay raise. People don't want the pay raise.
You didn't want the pay raise. You didn't vote for it.
No, I didn't vote for it.
I voted against it every time. She voted for it.
She did. So did Ashley. Right?
Frank Tomaszewski, he voted against it.
Correct, yeah.
Mike Prox voted against it.
So, you know, but just in totality, okay, you can certainly make an argument that you should pay legislators more because you get more quality people to do it, you know, and that makes sense. My argument is pretty simple, okay? I just got to Juneau, okay? Me, Ashley, Frank, Maxine, all brand new, okay? I was adamantly opposed to the pay raise. Fundamental principle being, I do not believe that someone who starts a new job and hasn't done anything should get a 67% pay increase. You should not do that.
And,
right?
And also, you ran under the premise of this is what you're going to get paid.
Yeah, exactly. You know, for me, you know, unlike other people, look, I had to restructure my business and my life and all that stuff to kind of take a job with a salary at that level, you know.
Yeah.
And I had already done all those things, you know. But, you know, the truth is, you know, the people who voted for that, there are people in the interior who voted for that, you know. You shouldn't have done it, right? How on earth do you go back and you tell people, and I don't care if you want the money or not, but how do you tell people that, hey, I just took this brand new job and, oh, by the way, I deserve a 67% pay raise. You know, that is indicative of a person who's never had a real job. Sorry, you know. But, you know, those are my feelings.
So. Tell me how you really feel.
Yeah.
First of all, I concur with everything you just said.
Yeah, I mean, come on, people, you know. So, and then the
Dermot Cole, explain it in totality. Don't hide some of the facts.
Yeah, don't leave details out. You know, there's plenty of blame to go around, and you can say blame. And the other argument as well, the moral people, they will just not take the money, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, my argument to that is, folks, I've worked hard my whole life. I didn't grow up with money. You know, I work hard in business. I worked hard to be successful. I'm, you know, privileged to be in the position that I'm at. But I don't get less money for working harder than other people who do the same job. That's just a fundamental principle I don't have.
Right? You know, it was interesting. So, in our budget, I put in a pay increase for city council members. It hadn't been changed in 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
And so I moved it from $500 to $650.
Sure.
And it came, you know, in our budget process, it came down to a 3-3 vote.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to cast a deciding vote.
Yeah.
And I voted against it. I said, you know, until you guys want this, and all of you vote for this, you know, but I'm going to bring it back next year.
Yeah.
You know, but if it's split, I'm not increasing your pay because you're all not in favor of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and like I said, you know, you can, you know, but anyway, so just remember when you see all the articles about veto overrides and all mm-hmm. that type of stuff and whatever happens, just remember that little tidbit.
Yeah.
I mean, so, and yeah, I mean, look, I tend to think that, look, politically, everyone's thinking about politics and how people are going to react. I just, you know, my philosophy is I just try not to get in there and I just tell people what I think about stuff. And my philosophy is, hey, if my voters appreciate that, you know, they're going to send me back. And if they don't, they're not, you know. But
you were a very effective legislator in your first year there. Out of the interior in the House, you were probably the most effective one. That was you and Mike Kronk. And Mike had been there. That was his third year.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I'm not speaking bad against anyone else because it takes you a good session or two to learn it. But you jumped right in and started doing things. That's your personality.
Yeah, you know, I do due diligence, you know. And, you know, I mean, look, I don't know. You know, lots of people work hard, like I said. But, you know, I mean, look, I ran, you know, for a set of reasons and purposes. And I also have skin in the game and stakes. You know, I tell folks, I got three young kids, and I want them to grow up and live in Alaska. And if you're not motivated to start fixing the problems now, you know, you're going to...
Where's your wife from?
My wife's Alaska Native. She actually grew up in Wasilla, right? But
that's okay.
Yeah, lots of family. Yeah, lots of family in the interior. You know, her mom's family was originally from Keokuk. Yeah, mm-hmm. Dad's family was originally from Cordova. Dad actually grew up in Skagway too, so down there in southeast. You know, but yeah, my wife's got lots and lots of family in Alaska over. So
and you arrived at Fort Wainwright and you stayed.
I did. I got here in November of 2006. You know.
Just in time for winter.
It was.
And just in time to go back to the surge.
Yeah, it was a little shocking, yeah. And I tell folks I love Fairbanks so much, I volunteered to go fight in Fallujah to get out of this place. You know,
And they only sent you home because you got wounded.
Yeah, you know. Well, they tried to send me home. I actually didn't want to do that. They were supposed to send me to Qatar, right? So when I got medevaced to the cache in Baghdad, they're like, hey, we're going to send you Qatar for observation. Maybe we're going to send you to Germany. And I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I actually just left in the middle of the night, and I walked to the helicopter pad, which is kind of funny because I was a PFC at the time. And I got to the helicopter pad in the green zone, and the guy there was like, hey, where are you going? And I just told him, hey, I wanted to go to BIOP to get back to Fob Calcer. And he said, cool, just sit on the bench. You know, somebody come pick you up. I'm like, really? I just randomly hop on a helicopter and leave, you know, nobody's going to say anything. So that's what I did, you know. Then I got back to Fob Calcer about 3 days later, and you're like, hey, what are you doing back? I'm like, I don't know. I just...
You had to come back to the family you have there.
Yeah, basically. You know, I tell folks all my friends were in Fob Calcer and at the time in the Airborne Brigade, you know, and all my video games and movies were in there too, you know. What was I going to do? I'm going to go somewhere, no clothes, no stuff, you know? I'm going to do that.
Where you don't speak English?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I wasn't going to do that. You know, besides, you know, I mean, there's a real societal guilt there, you know. I didn't want to not be fighting when all my friends were fighting, you know.
Exactly.
I volunteered to go fight, you know. So
you got a minute left, sir. How do you want to end it?
Oh, just, you know, just thank everybody and going to go down and work hard, and hopefully we'll be able to produce positive results for folks here in Alaska and especially in the interior in the district, you know.
Representative Stapp, thank you very much. And Fairbanks, it's been a great week, and I encourage you tomorrow at 1 o'clock to tune in to KFAR Problem Corner. Excuse me, KFAR Fairbanks Foodies. We've got some great things on you for tomorrow. We have a great lineup. Starts at 10, ends at 1. Hope to see you there, and you have a great day.